Blog Talk Radio.
Oh boy, we got a great show today. This is going to be a lot of fun. Talking to a gentleman that I'm very proud to have on the show again, Peter Woodburn of Slipper Still Fits. Well, great site that covers all the recruiting and, of course, all the daily and weekly news of Gonzaga basketball. Peter, are you on the line?
I am. How are you doing, Jim?
Great to hear you. Great to hear you on the line. And things have been going good over here. You know, I'm excited about the season, the way it's rolling away. There's been some really fun teams in the Northwest. You know, obviously there's plenty of excitement. You know, with everybody in the state of Washington, really having some good things to talk about. But we're talking about a Gonzaga team, and of course Oregon too, and Idaho, Montana, a lot of interesting basketball teams out there this season. And we can go into maybe a little bit of that if we have time. But I really want to focus on the Zags, and obviously fresh off the appearance in the title game, and you know, this last year, and a lot of people, you know, projecting sort of a down year or a rebuild. But, you know, I think anybody who really follows us knew that it would not be that far off the mark. What's your assessment just in general so far at what you've seen with the Zags this season since last time we talked, and now that you've had a chance to get a few non-conference games under your belt?
Yeah, you know, they are they definitely – you know, as you said, it's like people thought that it was just going to be a little bit of a down year. Even within the conference, they were picked to finish second in the conference behind St. Mary's. And I think a lot of that was just based off of what St. Mary's was returning versus what Gonzaga was losing. And I think a lot of people weren't really, I guess, and it makes sense, they didn't really know how it was all going to fit together for the Zags, but they still returned a lot of key players. And Jonathan Williams has been excellent, and Killian Tilly has been excellent, and they've gotten some really good minutes out of their freshman European center. Like, it's not going to be the new Shemek Karnowski, but Jakob Larsson from Denmark. And I think one of the biggest and kind of the brightest stories for the Zags that a lot of people were waiting to see happen, and it's especially happened in conference plays, we're finally starting to see the emergence of Rui Hachimura, and really kind of the dynamic athlete and the scorer that he is. And that has really, especially recently, has kind of been one of the most fun things to watch about this team, because he is as athletic as a player as Gonzaga has ever had. And he's, you know, just barely starting to he's only averaging, I think, somewhere around like 18 to 20 minutes a game or something like that. So he's only at the tip of the iceberg of what he can show. And so they've been a really fun team to watch. They've had their issues with turnovers, and they've had some sort of just a little bit of, I think at times, at one point in the season, they had six different players averaging double digit points, which is amazing. But at the same time, they don't really have that player that sort of takes over the game, or, you know, in the crunch time, who's going to be the player with the ball in their hands. And last year, that was Nigel Williams-Goss. And this year, it's kind of a coin toss. And so I think that the Zags still are trying to kind of find out that identity and figure out who they are. But, you know, they're a good team along the way, and it's been fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, their record I bet you wish it was your record. Their record is, you know, right now the three losses are not exactly what I would call bad losses. Florida, Villanova, you know, both which are top 10 teams. And Villanova, obviously, certainly a national title, you know, contender. Florida really is too, truthfully. And then a San Diego State team on the road, which everybody on the West Coast knows is no joke with the talent level they have. You know, when you have that kind of talent and athleticism and you put it together in a good, solid home game, I mean, that's going to be a very tough win. And they really did a great job. I'd like to mention featuring a Federal Way player, Jalen McDaniels, who's really coming to his own as a double-double machine, you know. And, you know, and they've got great talent up and down their roster, truthfully, and put it together in a real good win over Gonzaga. But other than that, you're undefeated. And like I say, after the San Diego State game, kicked into conference schedule. You're Gonzaga is 6-0. And now you're facing St. Mary's at home over there in Spokane. Gonzaga is going to be, you know, challenged there for sure. Then they go on the road to San. That's tomorrow night, by the way, at 9 p.m. Mm-hmm. Or excuse me, 6 p.m. Pacific, and that'll be on ESPN too. That'll be on ESPN also. Yeah, be careful with your words. Santa Clara this Saturday on the road, and then Portland, both of those on the road this coming Thursday. Obviously the WCC isn't the kind of challenge the Pac-12 is, I think, most years, and certainly not this year. But there's some good teams there. What do you think about the St. Mary's game coming up tomorrow? What's your take on that matchup?
Yeah, it's going to be a really interesting game because, like I was saying before, St. Mary's was picked number one in the WCC preseason poll amongst the coaches unanimously, because you're not allowed to vote for your own team. And so it was 9 votes for St. Mary's and 1 vote for Gonzaga. And I'm pretty sure that was just Randy Bennett voting for Gonzaga because he can't vote for St. Mary's. And St. Mary's, they have some really interesting pieces. They have Jock Landale, who, if he was playing in a larger school or a school with a larger profile, I mean, you know, Trey Young's having a fantastic year, but Jock Landale would be up with every other single player for a player of the year candidacy and All-American candidacy. I mean, he is one of the best big men in the entire country, and he's averaging like maybe close to 21 points and 10.5 rebounds a game. And he's shooting like 65% from the floor, and he shoots, I think, mid to high 70s from free throw. And he is just a stellar player. And then backing him up at point guard, they have Emmett Narr. I forget if he's a junior or if he's a senior this year. He's an Australian product, like a lot of the St. Mary's players, and he's second in the nation in assists per game. I think he's averaging well at like 9.3 assists per game or something like that.
9.4. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then incredible. You fill it in with their role players, and St. Mary's runs a really, really it's a very tight rotation. But they're also one of the most efficient teams in the nation on the offensive end. I think they're ranked number 3 in efficiency by Ken Pomeroy. I mean, they're a team that will consistently pass up a good shot for an even better shot. And so if they're working, they are, they can score and they can really kind of grind out games. But the key thing is that they grind. They play a very, very slow tempo. And we saw it in St. Mary's has 2 losses on the year, one in overtime to Georgia and one to Washington State. And in both games, the area where St. Mary's troubles is on the defensive end with more athletic players, and just kind of combine that with the speed that they play a game. It's really hard for them to catch up if the lead gets too big, because it's just not their style of play. And so it'll be a really interesting game to see what it is, because this St. Mary's team only lost, I think, 1 player from last year. That was they kind of ran a dual point guard with Emmett Narr and Joe Rahon, and they lost Joe Rahon, which was a big loss. He was a really good player, and I think he was a very underrated perimeter defender. And
he played there basically for 16 years too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's they're a very good, and they were a very good team last year, but last year Gonzaga just throttled them in all 3 games. But the difference is this year is that Gonzaga no longer has Shemek Karnowski. They no longer have Zach Collins. They no longer have Nigel Williams-Goss. They're not the top team in the nation. And so I think it is going to be a much tighter game, I think, than most Gonzaga fans are kind of willing to let themselves believe. But I still think that the athleticism is going to be an issue for St. Mary's. They showed it, you know, and Washington State is, you know, they're a decent team, but they're not the best team by any stretch. And St. Mary's really struggled in that game. So it'll be interesting to see what Randy Bennett tries to do to try and corral the Zags. And it's going to be tough because this is also the first game back from winter break for the students. Place is going to be loud. It's going to be rowdy. And I think that I've anticipated this year that St. Mary's and Gonzaga were going to split the series just home and home. And unless Gonzaga just comes out completely flat, I think that St. Mary's is really going to have an issue trying to keep up with them tomorrow.
Yeah, I think. Well, I mean, right now Gonzaga is ranked highly, you know, in the national polls, and St. Mary's, as far as I'm concerned, as far as I know, is not. But I think that they are rather even. I think St. Mary's right now very balanced. I mean, you look at their stats, and you know, I mean, Jacques Landale, obviously the big story, averaging 22 points a game. And 10 rebounds. I mean, averaging a double-double in college basketball is no small feat at any level. You just look up and down. It's such an efficient group. They don't have guys doing things that they shouldn't do. I mean, they have their top seven players are basically their main rotation. Not a single guy is averaging less than 38% from three, except for Longdale, who doesn't shoot any at all, basically, which is obviously good news for, you know, if you don't want guys to don't shoot, to, you know, you want guys to do what they do. But then again, you look at his field goal percentage on a huge amount of attempts. I mean, 251 field goal attempts at this stage in the season is large, and he's shooting 66% from the field. I mean, that's just kind of, you know, that's real notable. And conversely, every single other player in the top seven guys who are basically your main rotation with, you know, a couple other guys getting significant minutes actually, you know, but, and actually the top, really everybody all the way down to the very bottom guy who was basically sounds like he's played in garbage time only is shooting upwards of, well, they're all shooting upwards of 40% from the field, but most of them are shooting closer to 50. And then your free throw shooting is consistent as well. I mean, everybody's shooting well. The top seven guys are top eight. Well, I mean, all of them are shooting well, but basically your main rotation guys, your top seven guys are all shooting better than 71, and most of them are up there closer to 80. Four out of the seven are shooting upwards of 2% from the free throw line. And then, you know, which is something that's just strong. And then like everyone's shooting better than 30, you know, better than 39% from three in that group as well. And they're all shooting great. They're all taking care of the ball well. It's just a nice, efficient team. And like you mentioned, you know, the assists with Emmett Nahr at 9 assists per game. I mean, that's unheard of. And then, you know, obviously a double-double machine in Jock Landale. And then, but there's a bunch of other guys that are doing really well, too. I mean, Calvin Hermanson's up there with 12 points a game, 4 rebounds, you know, and nothing out in his stat sheet that's embarrassing at all on down the line. They're just – and Evan Fitzner's been there for a while, very solid player. You know, Colin Neal, you know, a guy, you know, whose dad is the coach over there at New Mexico, you know, a guy with a solid background and lineage and just a nice solid lineup. So, yeah, like I said, I could see it going either way, but I'll defer to you to make the prediction that Gonzaga is going to pick up a win tomorrow night, but this is no dull game. I don't think this is going to be a blowout. And but getting back to just what the Zags have done this year, I mean, there's a lot to talk about. I mean, basically, I mean, you're as far as the team itself, there's no shortage of good stories, you know. So, I mean, let's just take a look, for instance, at the Zags, you know, stats. I mean, You've got some players that have been putting up some good numbers. I mean, I don't think there's anything, any, you know, obviously Rui Hachimura is only averaging like 18 minutes a game, but showing a lot of potential. And I hope he'll come back for another year and continue to build on it. But I mean, there's a lot of talk that he might go to the draft. We can get into that later. Corey Kispert's been very impressive as a pure freshman, really impressive. You mentioned Jacob Larson. A guy that we talked about was a walk on Jeremy Jones is actually hasn't done that in some limited minutes. But then you talk about your main guys. You mentioned Williams. He's averaging 14 points a game, 7 rebounds. Perkins, you know, 14 points a game, 3 rebounds, 6 assists. Norvell, 12 points a game, 4 rebounds, 3 assists. You know, Tilly, who's one of my personal favorites, 12 points per game, 6 rebounds, 2 assists. You know, and Silas Melson is, you know, the last guy I mentioned. He's a very solid player and a veteran guard. You know, there's not really a weak spot in that top nine guys, really. I mean, it's a real solid 9-man rotation, pretty much. What do you think about their chances in as far as to win this conference, you know, and with the overall conference? I mean, we talked about St. Mary's. Do you think there's anybody else out there that could possibly, you know, sneak in and knock them off in this conference race?
I think, you know, the only other two games that I would put as a potential, I think one is at BYU. BYU is always a very hard team to predict because they're generally speaking, they're just an offensive juggernaut and they just score and score and score. And the question for their game plan is only if they can score more points than their opponents. And so BYU is one of those teams that is always dangerous for an upset. And it's really hard to figure out which BYU team you're going to see. I don't remember who it is, but that BYU has lost to in the conference, but they've already lost to one of the kind of more middle to lower rung WCC teams that realistically they really shouldn't have lost to. And so, and the other thing is that at BYU, the Marriott Center in Provo, I mean, it's as hard of a place to play in college as there is. I think it's about 18,000 people, and it's just a very, very loud and hostile arena. And so I think that is always a potential year in and year out for a pitfall. And then interestingly enough, the other one that I would say, I don't think that this is going to happen, but the University of San Diego, which is a very surprisingly strong defensive team, especially for the WCC and just nationally ranked. You know, they're not in like the top 10 in defense or anything like that, but they have a very strong defensive team, and they so far have demonstrated in their season that they've been able to keep it very close with some very good teams in college. And can potentially sneak one away. So I don't think that Gonzaga would necessarily fall to San Diego. I think they're definitely way better than that. And San Diego doesn't have the offense to really complement their defense as much. But I mean, you know, all it takes is a poor shooting night from the team or, you know, crazier things have happened. And I think that San Diego is probably the only other team outside of St. Mary's and BYU that maybe has that sort of game plan overall team cohesion to really be able to pull an upset. Cause this year, the WCC, the bottom of the WCC is just really rough and and hopefully will be better in the near future, you know, but like with Damon Stoudemire coming into Pacific, I think there's only like 3 players from the team last year that are on the team this year. And there's a lot of turnover in the lower ranks. So,
Well, Damon Stoudemire is a guy that certainly knows how to recruit with his, reputation in college basketball and has been around some big time recruiting programs, most notably Arizona. So I would think that he's got a good chance bringing in a level of player there that, in over time, you know, so I would think that things will come back there. Obviously Portland is doing well with bringing in talent, and Terry Porter with his NBA lineage, as well as what, you know, Stoudemire is doing, I think is going to bring in some new talent. And those are two of the, you know, the lower end programs right now, but those are two that you think would probably be able to at least attract talent. And have already shown signs of doing that. So, and then Loyola's looked good. They've had a couple of good games. But there's a few out there that, you know, obviously have some potential. What I hear coming from you is that, you know, it's really kind of a two-horse, three-horse race again with St. Mary's and, you know, BYU maybe having a you know, like you said, a kind of a not that great of a – the loss that they had was at Pacific, by the way, just to refresh your memory.
Yeah.
And they lost at home to St. Mary's, which is not a huge surprise, but it was in overtime as well. So I think they're a competitive team. They've had some decent wins outside of conference and had some good showing. So it's, you know, I think it's, you know, it's going to be similar to last year where BYU beat Gonzaga at home. Is that not correct?
That is correct, yeah. At the last game of the regular season.
As good as a team as Gonzaga was last year, you know, it's tough to maintain focus over an 18-game conference season and all that stuff. And, you know, so we'll just have to see how that goes. Getting back to your overall picture, with what's going on with recruiting, I know that there's been some really nice pickups. The overseas guy, the big kid from Eastern Europe is obviously a major story. I don't think people really have gotten kind of in the Northwest really understand the depth of that pickup for you guys, for Gonzaga. Basically what's the recruiting picture looking like for 2018 class?
The 2018 year was pretty interesting because I think for a lot of the fans, it was a little frustrating because I think that, you know, just having the Zags hit their Final Four for the first time, having the Zags hit the national championship game for the first time. And I mean, Gonzaga has always been around and kind of dabbling with a lot of these higher end recruits, it used to be top 100 guys, and now there's suddenly a bunch of top 50 guys that are throwing, you know, putting Gonzaga in their Final Four, their Final Six. And they just kind of, as that recruiting season was going, they just kind of slowly but surely were just missing out on each one. I think they were in on Andrew Nembhard. They're in on Tayshaun Cherry. They're in on, basically anyone that I can think of that they are in on, all those players chose different schools and they all choose them for different reasons. And so, but the one that you're mentioning, the one that was really kind of a surprise and rolled around really, really quickly was Flip Petrusev, I think is how you say his name. And he's looks to just be an absolutely phenomenal player. I think he's originally from Serbia, but he's playing in the Monteverde Academy down in Florida at a prep school down there. And he's just been having a great, fantastic season. And he was a real kind of under the radar guy. He goes to the same school as Andrew Nembhard, who is one of the top guard recruits of the 2018 year. And so I think that he kind of was flying a little bit under the radar of his like teammate, and the Zags are able to go in and pick him up. And I think that he's just going to be another just really stellar European style big man. And I mean, you know, if you're looking back at what Mark Few has been pulling out of Europe, generally speaking, he's pulling his big men out of Europe. And I think he really likes that style of what they bring to the game, and a really more of a finesse style of playing, you know, in the post, and a lot more focus on that rather than just kind of trying to get like a top 10 Sports Center highlight or anything like that. And so I think that he's really going to be a big piece for the Zags going forward. And then the other player that's going to really help him out starting next year is They got the transfer from San Jose State, Brandon Clark, who is one of the one of the better players in his conference, and he's just a real I think he stands around 6'8", and he's just a real kind of lunch pail workhorse forward. I mean, a guy that just grinds out rebounds and points, and and pretty much fits. I haven't really seen him play that much, so I think it's kind of that same sort of. I think he's a little stockier than Jonathan Williams, so maybe not as mobile, but kind of that same sort of style of like a slightly undersized forward, but someone who's just really. Who has the smarts for the ball and can really just like pound it low. And so they're going to go in mostly with next year. It's going to be most of the same team. Cause prior to all the people leaving early in 27, prior to like Zach Collins and Nigel Williams and all of them leaving early, they didn't really have a lot of open scholarship spots available. And so then there was kind of this exodus, and you just found yourself with going into the season. Originally it was only like one scholarship spot, and then suddenly you had four scholarship spots open. So I think that they patched the holes that they could pretty nicely. And, you know, maybe they're every year, you know, there's always a grad transfer or something. So they might be able to fill another hole with a grad transfer for 2018. They'll have the scholarships available for that. So, but I think overall for the recruiting, that'll be about it. And then in 2019, they got Anton Watson from Gonzaga Prep, who's having a great year, and then Brock Rivette from Kittitas High School, who's just a lights out shooter. So they're kind of hitting the guard, they're hitting the big men in 2018, and then they're going back to the guards for 2019. So it's all, the future's looking pretty good.
Yeah, it's a solid program. Mark Few's kind of just doing it, as he's been doing it for quite some time. I mean, I'm looking over the roster. Obviously, Tilly's a sophomore this year. You would think he'll be back. You got Wade has been, a solid prospect, with playing behind two veterans really in the backcourt, a senior and a fourth year senior and fourth year junior with senior with Melson and the junior with Perkins, and Perkins will be back. But you'll probably see a lot more Wade, next season. Norvell has been really impressive, and he's going to be he's only a redshirt freshman this year, so he'll be back. And I think that there's obviously Jacob Larson, who you already mentioned, is notable. It'll be kind of back more to that real power, big man oriented situation with the Euro guy. I can't pronounce his name, but you just said it, so I'll let you enjoy that. And of course, with Jacob Larson coming back, that big kind of power, where when you get the big guy out of the game, there's another big guy who's just as big and tough or bigger, that comes in behind him, that kind of an approach that has worked so well for Mark Few. And then, like you said, Hashimuro, he's only averaging 18 minutes a game. You think he'll probably be back, although he is getting mentioned in a lot of those draft, in a lot of those draft sites. So I don't know if that's going to come into picture, but it could very easily. And like I said, with Corey Kispert back, he's really an impressive player. They're gonna be good. What type of feel do you have for what the NBA draft could mean to Gonzaga, as far as maybe losing a Hashimura or maybe even some of these other guys that you never know what they might be thinking, like Tilly or Perkins or Norville? What do you think about the potential for an NBA draft early entry affecting their next season?
Yeah, I think for this year, like you mentioned, the two players who've consistently shown up on, not necessarily even consistently, whose names on various draft boards on the internet who've popped up, it's Rui Hachimura and Killian Tilly, and a lot of people have. The hype for Rui Hachimura has been there for quite a while, and it was more just, and when he arrived, part of the reason that he wasn't playing very much last year, although I mean, you know, the team went to the title. They didn't necessarily need him to play last year, but the reason he wasn't playing last year was because he's from Japan, and literally his handle of English was not where it needed to be for him to be able to really perform in a college game and to be able to understand the, you know, the commands of the coach or the commands of the players and everything. And was reading a story that, you know, I mean, just to highlight, it was, I think, from Jim Meehan, the Spokesman Review writer, who was talking about how one time in practice, Mark Few called Rui Hachimura a dumbass for something that he did. And Hachimura was just sitting there smiling because he didn't actually know, you know, what the word meant. And so I think that, you know, the hype's always been there for Hachimura, and he's definitely starting to show it now. And for him, it'll be an interesting question of an NBA team kind of more taking, if he's drafted, he's going to be a little bit more of a project player. I mean, because he has stellar skills, but he definitely, and even watching him this year, I mean, he's great offensively. He still struggles with his movement off the ball a little bit, and sometimes just kind of has these defensive lapses that, you know, that he'll hopefully work through over time. So I could maybe see him going. I think for him, it'll really just depend on how he's able to put forth for the rest of the year. And I think if he finishes the year really strongly, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see him ending up on some of those on higher and higher on some of those mock draft boards. And the other player is that's been in there pretty consistently, at least when the various sites do like draft boards for just only big men, is Killian Tilly pops in pretty often. Yeah. And he's a really, really versatile player. You know, he's such a fun and interesting player to watch, and you wouldn't necessarily expect him to be as good as he is, but he just has a knack for rebounding, and he has a knack for hitting shots. He's a fantastic free throw shooter for someone his size. He runs the floor well. You know, I think in 10, 15 years ago, Killian Tilly, like he's pretty lean. So 10, 15 years ago, he wouldn't have had a place in the NBA. But now in this sort of positionless, you know, Golden State Warriors themed NBA brand of basketball, you know, Tilly slides in with a whole load of teams. And so I think it's going to be kind of the same with Tilly as it will be for Hachimura, that it'll really just kind of depend on how he's able to close out and finish his year. He's putting up great stats for college, but he isn't the number one option on the team. And I think that if you took Williams out of the equation and Tilly was the one getting the ball fed low every time, I think that Tilly would be gone after this year. I mean, he would be probably averaging like 20 points a game or something like that, but he isn't. So I think it'll be interesting to see for Tilly as well. I would hope that for both players that unless they're kind of, I mean, they're both young enough that unless they're getting a guarantee that they're going to go in the first round, I would hope that they both decide to go back and try and because they both will be able to increase their stock heavily by just getting better in college. And they're both young enough that I don't think they necessarily have to worry about hurting themselves in that fashion if they stick out the draft this year and hop in the next year.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. I know you got to get going here pretty soon, but I was just going to say that just for fans out there, just to give you an idea, Jacob Larson, he's only averaging 12 minutes a game, but he's averaging 5 points and four rebounds, you know, and shooting 69% from the field and 70% from the free throw line. I mean, he's got great numbers, and you figure if he's getting, you know, twice as many or two and a half times as many minutes, you know, he's going to put up great numbers. And then you got your big Euro guy coming in next year as well. So he won't even really be pressured with being that first option. So, you know, that's another guy to take to look at, you know, as far as what you're going to be able to do next year. You probably return Tilly. You probably return Hachimura. You probably, obviously, you're getting Kispert and Perkins back, and then the new guys, and it's looking good. It's really looking good for the Zags, and I really appreciate you coming on the show. And let's get you back here again when we're closer to the end of conference season, and we kind of get a feel for what this team's looking like going into the NCAAs. I would assume that you get a chance at a not large bid if for some reason they don't win the conference tournament, you know. But we'll see.
Yeah,
it looks. I would think more than likely with losses to only Florida and Villanova and San Diego State on the road that would be a good enough resume. You got some quality wins in there, not as many as maybe some years, but probably good enough to at least squeak into the tournament at the very worst. But then again, you also run the hazard if for some reason you do drop some bad losses in conference play. You have an opportunity for a number of them because there are a bunch of kind of less than desirable teams that you could end up losing to on a fluke on a given night. So, but I would think we'll see the Gonzaga in the NCAA tournament. And I really appreciate you coming on and kind of giving us all the great information.
Yeah, thanks, Jim.
You bet. Well, Peter, we'll see you soon, and thanks again. And we're obviously talking to Gonzaga, and thanks, Peter. So what we'll do is at this point, I got some time to sort of reflect on what's going on in the rest of the Pac-12, in the rest of the Northwest, including the Pac-12 and the Big Sky, and the other teams out there. I mean, first of all, and then of course Garfield, it's just rolling here in Seattle. They took on Jefferson in Portland and beat them, in the Martin Luther King holiday, and they're just pounding teams around the Seattle area. They seem to be heading for an undefeated season again for Brandon Roy, and we'll see how that plays out. Maybe this time he'll be invited to the national tournament like he was with Nathan Hale, and this time maybe he'll accept and bring Garfield into that national tournament picture with the final eight teams in New York that they do that promotion. So we might see something exciting like that. And Brandon Roy is just really coming into his own. Anybody out there that wants to see just the best team in the Northwest, the team that has probably the best chance of finishing in the final eight or final four or whatever this year is probably Garfield, unless I'm forgetting some D2 or D3 or NAIA. I mean, they're really that good. I mean, they're just stacked. Jamon Kemp is blowing people's minds with his athleticism and length and skill level really ascending. Another guy, obviously, we've talked about a lot, is Jerron Brooks. He's committed now to St. John's after decommitting from USC over the quote-unquote, the investigation. So, I mean, he's a very, very solid senior big man leader there. You can't discount PJ Fuller, 2019 class guy that's probably the top guy in the state in that class, and a very good class, actually, in the state, along with Kemp and others, number of others. But he's really good, just really showed well in that game against Jefferson, led everybody in scoring and had a big game. He's kind of a leader that they can count on to put the team on his back when they need to. And he's got it going. That solid ball control point guard in Pierre Cockerell is another factor, big time factor for them to keep it all going, keep it all moving. And the list goes on. Eddie Turner's been playing well, with a solid defensive effort. He's starting to show consistently in the scoring column too now. Veteran in the Garfield program, a senior. So it goes on and they're basically like eight deep with D1 guys, as opposed to last year with Brandon had the Porter brothers and Philip Fuller, PJ Fuller, with three D1 guys and some decent role players of guys who, you know, they had Marjon Beauchamp, but he was very, very young. He's another guy that's contributing more this year consistently, can really shoot it, and will be taking over in a much bigger role as time goes on for Garfield. Didn't really have a lot of D1. Now he's got a lot of solid D1 players. I mean, basically, I think about 9 on this roster right now, if not more. So it's a good looking group, and they're fun to watch. And like I said, if you want to see the team that's going to finish the highest when all is said and done in the Northwest, and that includes Oregon, who is in the Final Four, and Gonzaga, who is in the title game, I think it's going to be Garfield. That's my prediction. So go on beyond that. I mean, obviously, there's been some really great stories. Portland State's had a really good year, but they met their match with Montana and lost by 3 in a really, really competitive game. Montana, we'll be having Travis Secure, their head coach, on more than likely next week. Montana's putting it together, very solid. And they've got again a number of contributors and that they can bring to the table, and I think their future is very strong. I think next year they'll even be much better. With Donovan Dorsey coming off injury, that should be, and he should be able to get a medical hardship waiver, so he'll still have 2 years to play. Probably including next year and the year after. And Ahmad Rory, leading the team in so many ways right now, and they're really looking good. But Portland State, truthfully, I mean, you can't discount them. It's a team that's playing a very fast-paced, real exciting brand of basketball. They're really, really hit you hard in the paint and on the boards and defensively, and can really put up the numbers. That's going to be interesting to see. Those teams are really distinguishing themselves. Idaho is hanging in, and really, a lot of people are talking about them, have talked about them as the favorite, of course, this year, and certainly not these other teams are doing well too. So, I mean, it's kind of hard to really say that, they're by any means running away with anything. I mean, there's a lot of good teams in this big sky. I mean, there just is. I mean, I guess Eastern Washington's has some good moments too. Just getting to where things are at there. I mean, right now in the big sky, you got there's plenty, actually. There's plenty of good stories, but you got Montana on top, 6-0. You've got Montana State also hanging in there with an NBA player, two games behind. You got Idaho, Weber State, Idaho State, Eastern Washington, all in at 2.5 games behind at 3-2. But Montana seems to be just the team on the roll. But you can't really count out any of those teams. And Portland State right now, 2-3, it's still very early. But you really got to look at them. Right now they have the least losses overall in this season. Next to Montana, we'll only have 5 losses. But overall, including their non-conference schedule, and then Idaho, they're tied with for 6. But I think Portland State will be there when it's all said and done. I really do. I think they're going to ascend to the near the top. They got 3 losses now, but I wouldn't want to face them. They're going to continue to pound it away. But Montana's got a big lead on them, 3.5 games with that win that they had, back a few days ago. So it's going to be something in that big sky. It's going to be a knockdown drag out. Weber's certainly tough too. And Idaho State, they're hanging in there. No one's really talking about them. And Eastern Washington too had beat a Stanford team that has really come into its own, and they've got a lot to talk about. So you know, and in Northern Colorado, they're ahead of Portland State right now. So, I think they're, 3-3, and then they could possibly squeak into this picture too. They've got a lot of good things going. Got some big time scorers, Andre Spite, Jordan Davis. You know, they can do it. So it's going to be fun to watch this Big Sky Conference, truthfully, this season, if you get a chance to really get out there and look at the TV schedule and see some of these games, because there's really some fun talent, and it's I know it's not, people are so used to the Pac-12 and maybe the Mountain West, but this is a league that's got just a lot of really great basketball going on this year. So, but getting back to the Pac-12, I mean, to be honest, I'm not real happy with the prospects of my Washington Huskies. I've been a Washington Huskies fan so long, and it's painful, to be honest with you, to see what's happened with that program, with losing Romar and Michael Porter, probably the best player to ever sign with Washington. I mean, it just makes so little sense to see what happened with Jen Cohen. And I know I'm in a minority. Everyone says, well, they're doing so great. They beat Kansas, they beat USC, and now they're 3-1 and 3-2 in conference after the loss to Stanford. But you know something, I got to be honest with Husky fans, and I know I've been sort of the after many, many years of being the most obnoxiously, positive, optimistic Husky fan anybody knows, to being the most negative one probably out there, truthfully, right now. I'm just having to see what I see. And as I mentioned before, I think, when all said and done, right now, they're a five, maybe a six win Pac-12 team. I was thought maybe there were 4 to 5 Pac-12 win team because of returning everybody. Some decent young players come in with Coach Hopkins. But I thought they'd be improved over last year, even with losing Markel Fultz being there. Fultz didn't play much of a role. He was in Pac-12 play last year. He was in there for a while and in and out, and mostly out, for the rest of the season. And it was a year that was trying, and obviously too trying for Jen Cohen to understand what was really going on there. You take this team, Noah Dickerson, Matisse Thybul, and of course Jalen Noel would have been there with Romar as well. Dejon Davis, who's the Pac-12 player of the week this week. Michael and Jonte Porter, who definitely was going to be there, who's, leading Missouri in rebounding and block shots, and it's just, just a potential NBA. I think most people think he's going to be a lottery pick when all said and done, and he has to play two seasons of college basketball because of his age. So, I think honestly, you add all that up with Blake Harris, with Mamadou Diarra, with whoever else they could have gotten, be it transfer. I know they were looking at JC point guard back in the day when they were just, before they got the news that Lorenzo was going to be fired. And after the last season, I think they would have been able to enhance their position by bringing in sort of a veteran guy like that to go with Davis and Blake Harris and David Crisp. David Crisp is a great player. He's playing a great year. He's having a good season. He works hard and he's inspiring. And I know that Hopkins is really managing him and trying to put him in a position to succeed as the point guard. But I think he'd be much better as a two guard, as the guy that gave you solid rotation minutes, an energy guy off the bench, sort of a microwave Vinny Johnson kind of a guy. And he's playing great, and I think I'm hoping for the best. He'll have a really solid senior season, kind of similar to Justin Dentman. But keep in mind that Justin Dentman had the benefit of playing the two guard that year with Isaiah Thomas, who's an NBA All-Star, as a freshman point guard, getting him the ball in good positions to score. And he was able to lead UW to an outright Pac-12 title and that year. So, as a two guard, mostly. So I don't know who's going to be their point guard at Washington next season. I mean, there's talk about Nate Pryor. There's Hardy, the freshman, again, a freshman. There's
Carter three, I like him. He's good. I think he's much more of a real point guard. I'm hoping maybe he could be the starting point guard next year and move Crispy to the two if a Pryor doesn't win it. And they don't pick up anybody else better. This new transfer rule could really help Washington. If that were to happen and anybody could transfer and not sit out a season as is being proposed right now, that could really help Hopkins with this rebuilding effort. He could get some more talent in there, maybe get a transfer veteran point guard to add to this this team that features some good pieces. It'll be a senior heavy team with Thibel and Dickerson and Crisp and Dominic Green, who's he's not getting a lot of playing time. I sort of understand that. He's been kind of inconsistent. He's kind of got some holes in his overall game, but he's played better and he's had some good shooting. I'm kind of wondering why he's maybe not gotten more minutes, especially after some of the great shooting he did in that very positive USC win down there. So they'll have a nice solid veteran team. Timmons will be a fourth year junior. I don't know if Carlos Johnson will be a junior, and then have all the guys they have that are freshmen this year come back. Jalen Noel, more than likely. I think he'd be very well advised to play at least one more year at UW. So they'll have a much more veteran team. I think next season the Huskies will have a decent shot to get back into being a 500 team in conference and maybe a bubble team in the NCAA tournament. I'm hoping, but then it all falls apart after that with the seniors gone, and it's interesting to see what kind of recruiting they can get. Jamal Bay seems like a good pickup. That'll be good. Nate Roberts is more of a project, but at least he'll have more bigs and you can get him some minutes next year, hopefully. And then come a factor by the time, they lose all those seniors. And you get, Hardy, the combo guard from California. And we'll see what kind of transfers could possibly come to UW. That would be, that transfer rule will probably help UW much more than it will a lot of other teams that are really benefiting from these grad transfers. UW can't get grad transfers in very easily at all. And you might as well just say they can't get them. And then with JC transfers is also tough with getting in UW admissions-wise. And they've had problems with that in the past a number of times, most notably with Chuck Garcia, which really cocked them, got him in, and then he couldn't get stay, that kind of a situation. Long and short of it, I think that transfer rule, if it does happen, would be a good thing for the Huskies. I think Husky fans should hope that happens. A lot of national media people are booing it, saying it's just going to create chaos. But it's chaos right now in college basketball. You want to know the truth? It's chaos right now. The FBI investigation is ongoing and will continue. I hope to see it really yield major results and rooting out the criminals. I'm not joking. This is the facts. This is the facts. And people used to make fun of me and think that I was some kind of nut conspiracy theorist. Some people on the national media have even gone on record as saying privately that they think I'm nuts. But I think the truth of the matter is they all knew I was right. The people that really know what's going on, there's criminal activities in college basketball and in basketball, involving agents, involving AAU people, coaches and programs that basically are talent brokers, involving high school coaches that become mentors and advisors for players, and then are some often spiffed, bribed to advise a kid to go to a school. And then there's also the phenomenon of boosters. And this transfer rule with the grad transfer really favors schools that have weak grad programs. A state school like Washington with an international reputation where it's extremely competitive to get in to grad programs. I mean, seriously, extremely competitive. They don't have it's not a good place for grad transfers who, play basketball as hard as you have to do that, and while they're getting some sort of undergraduate degree in some, very often, some lightweight field. And that's one of the other things about college basketball that's just absolutely corrupt and vile, is that they don't provide anything for these athletes. They don't provide them any pay, which I think is okay if they provide them room and board and a free education, but they don't even provide them enough food a lot of times, except, you know, places that, that, you know, very often provide more, you know. But, you know, and also I think academically they don't provide them enough academic opportunity to really get a marketable degree. Now, I think the best compromise, rather than pay players, which would never be anywhere near the amount that some of them are being paid under the table, so it wouldn't affect that corrupt practice and system. The only thing that's going to affect that is if the FBI blows up the money laundering and other, you know, activities that are involved behind the scenes that are too sophisticated for the NCAA to properly, you know, take care of, but are, you know, not sophisticated necessarily enough for the FBI not to be able to figure out. So let's hope that's done and some people go to jail, and including, of course, some financial people. You got to have a banker. You got to have a, you got to have somebody that's a creative accountant and, you know, person behind the scenes. And that's been the case. They've done that. It's a very high level fancy pants. And if you don't believe that high level, you know, legitimate companies like Goldman Sachs or, you know, any of these kind of companies are above the liability of getting involved with laundering money, that you have a system in place that can deliver cash or, you know, deliver property or these kind of things for, you know, basketball transactions to you know, to bribe players to go to colleges. Think again. Because we're like in a situation now where the president of the United States is involved in, has been, is alleged to be heavily involved in money laundering over the years. We live in a very tough time here in this country, and I think college basketball is symptomatic of that. I find it fascinating that that it's almost emblematic of the corruption and the oligarchy and the unevenness of the rule of law, from wealthy to the poor, and you know, lack of opportunity, all those things that are being talked about in the field of politics are just showcased in college basketball. I think that I think these guys need to get much bigger support. You know, all of them, every single one of the college basketball players at D1. Who are earning money that very often is supporting other athletic programs. Just those two sports, I think it'd be okay. Men's college basketball and football. I think if you want to have one of those kind of sports, one of those revenue producing sports, it's been a proven revenue producer in over time with TV revenue and the NCAA tournament and the college football, you know, bowl series and all these things. I think if you want to do that at your school, I think that you need to give those athletes more academic opportunity. I think for the non-revenue sports, I think it's okay to keep it at, you know, 4 to 5 years of full ride. But for those sports, there's so much pressure for these players to practice, to work out, to do all the things that, you know, that need to be done to compete, that you got to look at a situation where, you know, they need to be given something real for their participation. And sorry I didn't get too much Pac-12 today. I think it's, you know, obviously we got Utah game tomorrow for UW, and they'll be playing Colorado Wazoo. You know, a shout out to the Cougar Nation of such a horrible, you know, turn of events with Tyler, their great backup quarterback, allegedly committing suicide. Tremendous, horrendous, horrible, horrible reality. Tyler Helinski, probably your starting quarterback for Wazoo next year. Just incredibly sad and puzzling and just troubling that he would do that. And, you know, but the Cougars basketball team doing well, you know, really well. Robert Franks putting up, scoring 10 three-pointers against Cal, you know, in a win and a blowout win. And they're, you know, they're really looking good. So both those teams going down to the mountain schools, and Colorado obviously looking really good. And Utah, I think, underrated. I think UW's going to lose both those games. I honestly do. And I think a 5-6 win team. We'll go over why I think that maybe, you know, next week as we look closer at the WASU matchup coming up, and probably bringing in Jay Townsend for a little of that action if you can. But again, I feel bad. I almost didn't want to even do a show with this whole situation with this great Cougar quarterback and what happened. But I'm glad we did. I'm glad we were able to talk about that. And, you know, I just think that things need to change. I think things need to change. I think that the NCAA needs to provide real academic benefits for these players. I think this idea of grad transfers and, you know, just cool schools that have good academics and play by the rules having a disadvantage. Schools that have qualified academics and don't play by the rules. That's got to stop. And I think hopefully the FBI will help with that. And I'm hoping the NCAA helps with that by changing like this, the transfer rules and other rules that tend to favor, you know, some types of schools over the other for bad reasons. And so that's where that's at. I think UW will benefit from that. It's a great academic school. It's a great opportunity for, you know, upperclassmen that maybe want to transfer, that don't want to have to sit out a year. I think that might be a positive thing for the program and for college basketball to just do things that way. No penalty for transferring. That would be a great thing. I think so I'm all for it. I think while they're at, they should turn the NCAA tournament into a 128 team field too, to get rid of the team. I mean, just all these teams that have, you know, these major conference teams that are 500 teams get bumped out. These bubble teams, you know, with wins over top teams. You know, while these automatic qualifier low level teams who play nobody in January, February, March get in the tournament and, you know, get an opportunity to, you know, to play. I think it would be better to have every team out there that's even close to tournament, you know, worthy play, and have that first week be three games. I mean, we see it with tournaments all the time, 8-team tournaments that, you know, where you play three straight games in a weekend. Do it in the NCAA. Have 128 teams, turn into 64 after one game, and turn into, you know, 16 by the end of the weekend, and then you go back to the normal format. I think that would be another change. And get rid of the NIT. It's just totally useless and meaningless. Same with the CBI and the CTI. Get all those teams that are in those postseason tournaments, put them in the SLV tournament, allow them to play, you know, allow them to play, you know, where a team like Washington back in 2012 didn't get into the NCAA tournament, then they end up getting to the Final Four in the NIT with Tony Roten and Terrence Ross and such, and CJ Wilcox, three NBA players. I mean, you know, they should have been in the NCAA tournament for one thing. That was stupid, but nonetheless, they should have had a chance to compete. And that's what I think they should do. I'm hoping that they'll reconsider that, you know. And I know it'd be a crazy week, but it's already crazy if the NCAA tournament's first week. And I think it would be even cooler if it was even crazier. How about that? Maybe take a week off after the conference tournament, so give everybody a chance to make travel plans and all that kind of stuff. Maybe take a week off and kind of give guys a chance to sort of get their act together, and then start with a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or whatever it would be, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, kind of constant NCAA tournament madness. And on that, I will leave you. And next week we should have a great show, looking to have feature Montana coach Travis DeCure, and definitely talk about the Huskies and the Cougars more with Jay Townsend, hopefully. And always be a good sport, always, as the great Bob Robertson, who's still with us, would say. This is Jim Bassnett for Talking Hoops. We'll see you next week.